Welcome back. I'm always glad when people come back for a second time, although it looks like about 20% of us said, what the heck. So welcome back. Lecture 2, Marketing 25 out of 10 Principles of Marketing. I'm still Dr. Marks, and we're picking up presently on lecture notes page 21. You know about the housekeeping slides from last time. It's where we are now, and some of the stuff is non-testable, announcements and whatever. And then marketing the news, business the news is testable, so you should be taking notes. No, I did not provide white pages in the lecture notes so that you could write down marketing in the news. You'd be paying for empty pages. So I guess you have to write your own notes. They announced this today to us. That seems a little silly. Anybody actually donate blood in general? Blood donors here? One person? Two people. Good for you. So I was going to try to get there before class. It didn't work. I don't know if I can get there after class. But anyhow, until 6 p.m. today in the Student Center, you can help save a life and be in for all that good stuff up there. Think about it. We know about the Flash of Safe 8. We know about the important dates. So upcoming mini test number 1 of 13. They count for 50% of your grade. They're taking it home on your own computer. First one is not locked down. Others are. So it's going to cover lectures 1 and 2. 1 was Monday. 2 was today. We didn't get as far as I wanted on Monday, so I guess a lot of the hypothetical questions could be on the syllabus, which is stuff you wrote down, of course. The rest will be wherever we get to today. Where is that? I don't know yet. We haven't done it. I'll send you a note. All right. It opens tomorrow at 8 a.m. and closes on Sunday at 11:59 p.m. All right. So you got it. You know it. You see it. You're going to do it. Hey, Webbies, I haven't said hi to you. You got it too? Yeah? No? Well, look. It's there. All right. So here we go. How many people have heard of the NFTs? Heard of them. How many are not quite sure what it is we're talking about when we say NFT? Anybody not quite sure? Okay, so thank you. So an NFT is a non-physical object that people pay real money to own. Typically, it could be a work of art, it could be a poem, it could be an image, a picture, it could be a picture of a product. Typically, people pay in cryptocurrency to buy the NFT and own it. And it sounds like the stupidest thing in the world, you would say, because anybody can copy an NFT. It's a digital asset, right? Anybody could copy it and say, hey, I got the NFT. The counter argument has always been, could you go out and find a picture of the Mona Lisa online? Could you download that picture? Would you have the digital image of the Mona Lisa? Would you own the Mona Lisa? No, it's the same sort of logic. Each of these is uniquely identified through cryptocurrency stuff to you, and you own that digital image. Having identified, anybody own an NFT, by the way? Anybody buy an NFT? Yeah? Can you say what it is, or you don't want to say?
I forget what it was. I was in high school. I lost like
$300. Lost $300 on the NFT. All right. You tried to sell it. Well, will NFT be the hottest ticket to the September Fashion Week? Prada, Jason Wu, and Gucci too. Major luxury fashion brands are offering their NFT holders exclusive access to fashion shows and events, a practice called token gating. That's different than toking, and if you're not sure of the difference, I'll explain it to you after class. Token gating that can replace the front row and serve as the new velvet rope to get access into special events. So we're seeing technology in marketing. We're seeing building customer relationships with this technology. More and more token-gated experiences are going to be around in 2023. Prada is among the growing list of luxury brands to tie digital items, that is NFTs, with physical products. Gucci revealed that digital versions of its archive-inspired Blondie bag are on offer at its new Gucci Town destination on gaming platform Roblox. So social media and the metaverse in marketing. Fashion brands are looking to see what they can do during the Paris Fashion Week using official NFTs. It's going to open up an amazing range of possibilities. And then it creates a foundation, an asset for building a brand experience. So what are they doing with this asset? They're going to build strong community, strong customer relations. You're tied to the brand. You purchased and paid money for this digital asset, and now you're getting something back in addition to the ownership of the product. So developing consumer experience and relationships. Fashion brands are not looking at this from a crypto price speculation where you lost your $300. Who am I pointing to? You bought it. To where you lost your $300. That's not what they're getting at. They're looking at it purely as a new way to connect with new audiences and the kind of community that they want to build, says Sean Patwell. You can focus on NFTs, but it's not really about the NFT. It's about the community, and the community is where everything happens. So we're getting consumer involvement. We're building brand communities. Using NFTs to unlock experiences for consumers is really exciting. Consumers will be able to learn about the fashion industry, whether it's attending a party because you're special, you have an NFT, or going to a fashion show, or even being invited to a digital experience. It's really cool and innovative and completely different. So here's technology innovation and customer relations in the world of metaverse, NFT, digital assets. Pretty cool. So I was purposely doing this. I had to go find one of these, which is walking around drinking a liquid death, and at least somebody turned to their C partner and said, I guess he's drinking in class. I guess that's cool. How many people don't know liquid death? The couple didn't. Okay, liquid death, fortunately for me, is a new, relatively new product category. That's a can of water built to look like an alcoholic beverage, right? So the latest innovation in beer is water in a can. Have you heard of Tallboy Cans Liquid Death, a relatively new product? Makers of the scary-sounding beverage sponsored the opening night gala in New Orleans at the cocktail industry's annual conference, hoping to persuade more bartenders and restaurant owners to serve Liquid Death back home. So working on channels of distribution to carry this new product. How many of you guys have actually had a Liquid Death? Oh, I didn't surprise too many people then, all right. The cans covered with skull and crossbones logo are filled with water from the Austrian Alps. Okay. At a glance, few would guess that they carry no alcohol. That is the point, said Liquid Death founder Mike Sussus. Mike, we're using packaging and brand psychology to make something healthier, not feel like it's healthy. Water is healthier than beer, but we don't want you to feel like it's healthier. It's water, but we don't want the image. So here's the importance of understanding consumer behavior and psychology in this market. The company competes in a new no-booze beverage market that includes brands Guia, Disol, and Athletic Brewing. So obviously competition in the marketplace. The beverages cater to partygoers who seek conviviality of social events without drinking alcohol, either for health reasons or to avoid risking hangovers, regretful behavior, or flashing red lights on the drive home. Many prefer to describe their teetotaling beverages and to avoid the nosy, why aren't you drinking interrogators? So obviously it's a niche market and they're providing consumers with value. One guy talked about the value of, at the end of the day in the mosh pit, he was able to take the can and smash it into his forehead like you do with a beer can, a value to him. Almost a quarter of respondents to a Nielsen IQ survey said in January that they were cutting back on drinking alcohol. That might have contributed to the 1.9% fall in total alcohol sales in the last year, since August of last year. Sales of non-alcohol beer, wines and spirits, meantime, were up 20.5% over that last year. That is changing consumer tastes. We in marketing and business have to track those changing consumer tastes and ask, what does it mean for our business? Anything? Should we do something? Can we do something? They've done something. Another market for the product is young people. Part of the attraction for middle schoolers is the chance to fool adults by looking like they're drinking beer. We could debate whether or not that's really a good practice. Anybody, I don't know if it's still in the marketplace, anybody ever see the little white candy cigarettes that kids used to smoke and shock adults when they saw you across the playground looking like you were smoking? And of course, that was part of the thrill. Was it good? Did it encourage smoking? I don't know that. This is along those lines, though, right? We're shocking adults. In fact, of course, they actually played up to this with their Super Bowl commercial from last year.
Breaking the law, breaking the law. 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 Breaking the law, breaking the law.
Don't be scared, it's just water. Death to plastic. So they also don't want you drinking water out of plastic. So obviously that's what they've done, and they're playing a group of elementary school kids whooping it up with cans of Liquid Death and a pregnant woman. Oh my goodness, she's drinking. Oh, it's water. Liquid Death earned $45 million in 2021 and is on track for a 300% growth. You should be so lucky to have that company, 300% growth this year. A 16.9-ounce can of the original flat or recently released carbonated water costs about $2. So we're seeing success at satisfying consumers with this new trend, and we're seeing a bit about price in the marketing mix, what it costs to purchase the product. Yeah? So here's to healthy liquid death. Any Siggy yogurt likers, users? Siggy yogurt? No, I didn't find any Siggy yogurt in the store where I found my liquid death. How Siggy's yogurt is aiming to reach millennials with a new campaign. As more brands promote a healthier lifestyle, like liquid death, I guess, in an attempt to court millennials, Siggy's is leaning into that mindset with a new brand campaign. Less sets you free. So again, changing consumer tastes, positioning the brand tagline. Known for its low sugar, high protein products, the yogurt brand builds on the idea that less is more in their 30-second TV spot of the current campaign.
When we shed artificial expectations and choose a simple path that's made with intention, not filler, we move toward a life where we feel fuller and free. Siggy's Skyr, full of protein, less ingredients, less sugar. Less sets you free.
So again, I'm not sure that I want to encourage people to quit their job to enjoy who knows what, but that's what they're doing there, sort of. So in the commercial, as you saw, a woman quits her job to live a simpler life and indulge in Siggy's. The campaign began airing August 25th and marks the brand's largest effort in terms of media spending since its launch in 2005. So we see them promoting this new brand image that they're trying to get out the message about. What we try to do is connect the big idea, but on an emotional level, with people who are searching for something different or trying to make a different choice. And that is all in the service of that deliberate mindset of living a full and perhaps simpler life, said Eric Smith. So we're seeing the ad appeal strategy. We're seeing the brand image that they are promoting. The spot will run on traditional TV, connected TV, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Digital and out-of-home ads created in-house will showcase illustrations of Siggy's yogurt. So we're seeing their media strategy. So marketing, it's everywhere. All right, we pick up with page 20, lecture notes, page 21, and that's page 6 in the textbook, where I did not get to last time, but hey, it's hard to do everything. Okay, lecture notes, page 21, chapter 1, creating customer relationships and value through marketing. Broadly, what marketing is here for, what marketing is all about. So you are involved in marketing every day. I take exception to your author's statement, though, on page 4, that you are a marketing expert. If you're a marketing expert, you got an A in the course, and I don't need to teach it. You come down here, and I'll learn. So you're not a marketing expert, but you do engage in marketing. You come in contact with marketing. You shop at markets, but you're not an expert in marketing. I'm sorry. We disagree. So what is marketing? The long definition, which is in your lecture notes, so you don't have to write it down. Marketing is the activity, set of institutions, and processes for creating, communicating, delivering, and exchanging offerings that have value for customers, clients, partners, and society at large. So this is the official American Marketing Association definition, which they redid a few years ago. This is one of the icons, Tony, that we're talking about, terminology and concepts. But almost nothing that we do in marketing satisfies everybody. Almost everything we do, somebody has another opinion about. So there are people that are probably unhappy that, what's the name of my drink? Liquid Death is marketing a product to children. There are probably people unhappy about the fact you're marketing it to children, right? Even though it's water. You can't satisfy everybody. With the definition, when it came out, Mike Smock, a practitioner, did not like it, took exception to it. And Mike Smock wrote, the American Marketing Association recently updated definition of marketing as marked a bit of brouhaha. The definition, the first update in 4 years, reads what I just said it was. It'll be used as the official definition of marketing in books. and taught in universities nationwide, according to the AMA. Big mistake, says Mike Smock, managing director of marketing consultancy vSenate, who blogs about marketing. In a post, Smock wrote that the definition may lead marketers down the primrose path. Marketers can hardly get it right in small enterprises. How are they going to extend that to society at large? The bottom line is CEOs are disgruntled with marketing, and this definition doesn't help. The new definition, he says, gets away from fundamentals like sales, revenue, margins, and market share. Do you imagine that I think sales, revenue, and market share aren't important? Do you imagine that's what I think? They are important. And who they're especially important to is a frontline manager. But if your strategy team, your high-level folks, are only thinking about those issues, they're doomed to failure because competition, the marketplace, and changing consumer tastes and values will overtake their focus on revenue and market share. So he's right for somebody who's a frontline manager. Nancy Costopoulos, CMO of the AMA, said the association had anticipated some dissent. We think it's healthy for the profession to have a dialogue and a conversation about the definition, but 70% of the 1,000 marketers responded to queries about it said it was an improvement on the prior definition. It's not just about marketing in management, but marketing at a higher level. Smock is less than impressed, and in his actual blog goes on to use some bad language about the whole thing. But this is the broad definition that you're going to see at most institutions, despite Mike Smock.
Marketing's.
So we're going to hear from one of our video guest lecturers. This is, he was at Spectrum, which is now, what is Spectrum now? What is it?
Spectrum,
yeah, but there's something else now, too. It's Time Warner Spectrum. It doesn't matter. The point is, he is more of a frontline manager, so I asked him, what do you think marketing is to you?
Marketing is very important at Time Warner Cable Business Fest. It really gives us the ability to go out and collect all the marketing trends, the data, put together incentives, put research and tools around to really drive sales for our organization. How I like to tell my marketing manager, her job is to really ring our phones. They get brand awareness out there and really drive sales so that we're successful.
So I wouldn't disagree with him. It's not our high-level definition of marketing, but for a marketing manager, he's talking about the Mike Smock view of the world. Yeah, that's what marketing is, right?
Marketing
seeks to discover consumers' needs, wants, and desires. And unfortunately, or I guess good for marketers, but it makes our lives hard, consumer needs, wants, and desires are constantly changing. Alcohol beverages are in. Alcohol beverages are out. Health is in. Health is out. What are we to do? We have to track those. We have to discover them. We have to watch them. And then as marketers, we need to try to, as appropriate for our business, satisfy those needs, wants, and desires. And we're going to do that at a profit. Or if we are a non-for-profit organization, we're going to do it to satisfy organizational goals. Not-for-profits also engage in marketing. And we have to do it through an integrated effort of the firm. Every piece and part has to work together, or else it's not effective. Consumers don't get it. Your audience doesn't understand what's going on. All right, so that's sort of my shorthand for marketing. Discover consumers' needs, wants, and desires, satisfy them at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. This involves the idea of an exchange which is the trade of things of value between the buyer and the seller so that each one is better off after the trade. In a typical marketing consumer-based transaction, what is the value from that transaction that the marketer gets? What does the marketer get out of it? What's the business person get? Yeah. Say again?
Profit,
money, I hope. Or, of course, if it's a not-for-profit organization, then they get your time or your ideas or whatever, but profit. And what does the consumer get out of the deal? The item, the product, the service, right? Whatever it is that they were purchasing, and both people are better off.
I was going to ask you, with regards to out-of-profit, dealing with non-profit, you said something. I wanted to get what you said about that.
What I was saying was that unlike most businesses, not-for-profits are not in it to make a profit. They have to make enough money to stay in business, but they have goals that they're trying to serve, right? So a religious organization is marketing, but they're not in it to make money, we hope. They're in it to save souls, to help the community, et cetera.
Achieve their goals and mission.
Achieve their goals and mission, right? Rather than focused on profit. And today, we need to deliver all of this through an excellent customer experience, which you saw me just talking about in our Marketing the News as we talked about fashion and NFTs, creating that experience for the consumer. So it's not good enough just to satisfy needs, wants, and desires. You have to do it through an excellent customer experience. We are in what we might call an age of experience. Today's consumers want the whole experience. Let's hear about Zolt Systems talking to us about that.
We live in an age where businesses need to look beyond the aesthetics of a product or the practicalities of a service. Where consumer engagement and loyalty count far more than features and benefits alone. Where consumers expect to interact with or even influence suppliers, not just be sold to. Products are no longer enough for today's consumers, who value experience over all else. The age of experience has arrived. The key to success in today's economy lies in delivering consumer experiences that demonstrate true differentiation. But the task is a daunting one at best. What exactly is meant by experience? And how can business influence it and drive consumer connection? The key to making consumer experience the true focus of innovation is to capture insights and expertise from across a business's entire ecosystem. Shaping the right consumer experience requires collaboration between all roles within a company, from marketing and management to sales and engineering. Only by connecting all the dots between people, ideas, and data can a business drive consumer loyalty, engagement, and value. The start of every experience is all about the anticipation and promise of things to come. In the age of experience, businesses need to place consumer experience at the heart of innovation. And that means asking the right questions and asking the right people to understand the present and navigate the future.
And this company will help you do that. If you're paying attention, you picked up on some ideas. So in order to create this customer experience, it's not just the product, it's not just sales, it cuts across the country, it's company. It's an integrated effort of the firm. We all have to work together to make this happen. I do digress a little bit every time I see this. This is meant to go to a business audience, and there's a lot of emotion built up in this particular thing. The lady's getting on the elevators, they're talking about anticipating experience, and she's licking her lips. And then she's going up in the room, and I suppose they're probably married, right? So, but we do have this idea that this company will help you gather all the data you need from your consumers to see what sort of experience you can provide for them. Technology, as we saw with the NFT example, is helping to enhance the customer experience. The global augmented reality market is projected to grow from $6.1 billion in 2021 to reach something like $98 billion by 2028. The COVID pandemic undoubtedly has accelerated the investment of companies in augmented reality, driven by the greater need for companies to deepen customer relationships in digital platforms while people were not going into their stores and engaging with them in person. Within the context of marketing, augmented reality allows brands to offer unique and immersive digital experiences and to engage consumers in memorable ways, which is what the fashion industry was picking up with these ideas that we just talked about. Retailers such as ASOS, a British online fashion and cosmetic retailer, jewelry brand Kendra Scott, Shopify, Burberry, IKEA, Gucci, with a virtual sneaker, and Inca Group, which owns IKEA, have invested in augmented reality, virtual reality, or visual artificial intelligence tools to engage the consumer, to draw them in, to make them want to be part of their community. Machine A is a London-based concept store, which is usually dedicated to showcasing contemporary fashion design. In 2021, because of the pandemic, the London Fashion Week events were either canceled or limited to digital shows. So Machine A came up with a concept to enable as many people as possible to view the work of their emerging designers. The idea was a virtual boutique, which aimed at bringing an immersive spin to a digital season of shows, bridging the space between IRL and URL in real life and unreal life on the internet. By scanning a QR code embedded in posters and billboards located around London, mobile users were able to enter the virtual boutique and explore the new collection of designers. AR in this context helps to build a much closer bond between the consumer and the brand at a time when it's difficult to foster that engagement. So here is the augmented reality shopping boutique. Here it is on your machine, on your mobile device after you clicked on the code. And here's sort of what you would see.
Hi, I'm Georgie Evans, and I'm fashion editor of Tomorrow London, and I'm here in my local park to take you on a tour of the Institute of Digital Fashion and Machine A's Instagram Immersive Filter. It's the first day of London Fashion Week, and as such, the filter shows a selection of London designers' thoughts on the future of fashion. So let's take a guided tour together. I'm opening Machine A's Instagram account, tapping on their filters, and there's the store. So just stepping into the store now, taking a bit of a look at the space. This is amazing. It's so nice to see all these pictures on the wall. So if you look to the right, you can see Cameron Williams' quote there. And that's one of the only ones you don't have to tap, so that's just straight away there for you. And then I'm very keen, obviously, to have a look at a cold wall. Tomorrow Brand Love Support. Tapping on the exclamation. And then we've got the future of fashion is essentialism and functionality. Lovely. And then you can see in the background there that the cold wall pictures lit up. So every time you tap on a quote, the picture lights up to match, which is really nice. I can see Richard Quinn to the right there tapping on. And lovely quote about community. That's grand. And there's Richard Quinn lit up in the back. Take a little tour of the space. There's quite a few boxes here. God, it's so surreal. Ah, and then the outside world. So I'm coming outside now. And here we are, back into the real world. I only touched on three designers there, and there's quite a few more for you to explore, and I highly recommend that you do. A great start to London Fashion Week. If you want to dive in, head to Machine A's Instagram, tap on the filters, and have a go yourself. Definitely recommend trying in an open space, kitchen, living room, garden if you have it, but it's really good fun, and as I say, a great start to London Fashion Week. I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, probably don't do it on a street corner. You walk into the street while you're walking through the virtual store, but you get a sense that this is a lot more engaging maybe than just looking at pictures. You're able to walk, interact, tap, see things. So augmented reality is here. While this example is mostly about awareness and engagement, as there's no integrated shopping functionality, it does hint at how AR could enhance the e-commerce experience in the future, essentially creating virtual boutiques for customers to both browse and buy in an entirely immersive way. We can also see this as a version of a company entering into the metaverse. So technology influencing marketing and consumer engagement. So what factors influence marketing at a broad, high level? Well, one thing that's going to influence what marketers do at the pragmatic level is the mission of the company. Are you a not-for-profit? That's important to know. Are you in sustainability? Is that a big thing? That's important to know. So the mission is going to be a driving force, and the goals and objectives that the company is trying to get done now is going to influence your marketing strategies. The management and people skills that you have, if you don't know nothing about the web or metaverse or how to create anything, you're probably not a good way to go for you until you have somebody in. And the resources that you have. How many, I think last time we learned not many people. How many people are interested in entrepreneurship, running their own business? A couple more raise their hand this time. Your resources are a little less than somebody working for Procter & Gamble. You have the opportunity to do different sorts of things. That's going to influence what you can do in marketing, obviously, right? Society influences marketing as well. Think about the changes in society. Over time, the LGBT movement has influenced marketers. The Black Lives Matter has influenced marketers. It doesn't matter. I'm going to say something else. The pandemic has influenced marketers. So these things have influenced, changed society's views. Not everybody, by the way. There are people there that do not like these topics. Segments of the marketplace. You cannot please everybody. Everybody doesn't feel the same way. But in general, society is moving. It influences our marketing as well. And environmental factors. So that was probably the example of the pandemic strongly influencing stuff. An environmental factor, which we'll talk about quite a bit. So here we see the organization, right? And a lot of stuff, I understand there's stuff that doesn't have anything to do with marketing. I try not to talk too much about it because it's not marketing. But there are other things out there, right? Manufacturing, research and development, HR, information systems, finance, the management of the organization, all being influenced by stuff outside, other organizations, suppliers, customers, shareholder owners. And this stuff is going to come down and influence marketing, as are these environmental forces, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the initials spell out CREST factors. Competition influence us. Regulation, legal, and political factors influence us. Economics, social, technology, all of these things are influencing our company, our consumers, and so what we in marketing have to do, right? We're busy people over in marketing. So let's think about the way to satisfy needs. That's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to discover and satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires. So let's imagine you want a, what, do people still have friends? Do people have friends? Is that a thing? One guy has a friend. All right, well, let's imagine that you have a friend and you wanted to get a funny birthday card for that friend. What's one thing you could do to get them a funny birthday card? I see no one studied physics. They don't have any idea how you could get a birthday. Yeah?
Can I go out and buy one?
Well, one thing you could do is go out and buy one. Thank you, sir. How else could you get one? That would be buying one, yeah, from an online market. Yeah, how else could you? Yeah. You can make one. I'm artistic. I will make one. And then the other one nobody here would do is steal one. Don't do that. I'm not suggesting you do, but that would be one way to get it, right? Shoplifters will be prosecuted. Or you could voluntarily offer someone something of value in exchange for the card. Now, your friend might really like the card that you made for them, but that's not marketing. We're not having entities exchange something of value for something of value. So only the last one describes an exchange in the marketing sense. You give someone something of value, money, in exchange for the card, right? So that's the sort of thing that we mean about satisfying needs in a marketing sense. So in order for marketing to occur, you need two or more parties, like a buyer and a seller, involved in a voluntary relationship, we want to build customer relationships, with unsatisfied needs. The marketer's unsatisfied need, as we just identified, was the need for revenue, for profits, and your unidentified need is for the product or service they're selling. Or for not-for-profit example, your religious organization needs, among other things, volunteers. You volunteer your time and you get a feeling of helping the community, something for something. Each party has to have a desire and an ability to engage in an exchange. So, as we know, lots of companies and brands go out of business every year. People don't want whatever they're offering. They don't see any value in it. And the parties need to be able to communicate. Even if I have something that you really like and would want to buy, if I'm not on the internet, if you can't get to me locally, if I can't communicate with you for whatever reason, nothing happens. I got a business again. And each party must have something of value to exchange. Time? Sure. Money? Sure. What's that thing of value that you want to exchange? So this is what we need in order for marketing to occur in the sense that we're talking about it here. So if what we need to do is discover consumers' needs, wants, and desires, the question is, what do people want? So in order to satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the organization, we need to understand what people want. You would say, that's pretty easy. Not. People may not know what they want until it's offered up to them. Oh. I mean, I don't know. How many people thought they wanted a can of water that looked like beer before it was offered up. I'm pretty sure that wasn't a really big group that thought, that's what I've been waiting for, until he saw it. People may not be able to tell you what they want. They can't verbalize what they want. People may not be able to see the future and think about how these unknown products might be something that could satisfy a need, want, or desire for them. Anybody old enough to remember the Discman mobile music devices that played CDs? Yeah, you remember those? Okay. And did they play music? They did play music. And could you carry them around with you? You could. And what was the problem when you carried that music around with you? It would scratch, it would skip, it wasn't a very good experience. So if I said to you, what would you like improved in your Discman, whatever they were called, you might say, you know, I'd like it if they came with a different cover on them, a little fashion statement. They're pretty big, could you make them smaller? I would like them if they didn't skip. I doubt you would say, I would like to have a device which I could download thousands of songs onto and port around without any skipping because it's all digital. That's not something you would say because you can't picture it. So it's not that easy necessarily to understand what consumers' needs, wants, and desires are in advance of working on it, the problem. Consumer needs come from human needs. So these are the basic needs to life and society. We'll go over one more time, probably the 50th time you've ever seen Maslow's hierarchy presently. But these are the needs for food and shelter, the need to be safe, the need to belong, the need to be loved. So unless we have any aorists here who claim they don't need food, anybody here an aorist? You exist without food? So unless you are an aorist, how many people need food? Webbies? You too. All right, so they need food too. So we need food. Consumer wants are a way to satisfy those needs, and those are shaped by the environment, culture, and personality. How many of you who need food do eat meat and like meat? You want a burger. How many do not like meat? You do not want a burger. Okay? So if I tell you about that tasty burger, that juicy burger, that nice rich burger, and it's at a great price on a lovely bun, do you say suddenly, oh, I want it? No, it's a burger, it's meat. I don't eat meat. How many people eat meat? Okay, so how many people eat steak? Pork? Snake? Well, you don't eat snake? Why not? I mean, it's eaten in parts of the world, but it's not part of my culture. It's not part of what I'm used to. You aren't going to satisfy my need very easily with snake. And by the way, never mind, let's talk about the future that we all hear about insects as the protein source. By the way, we eat beef. Not everybody eats beef, even though they need food and they like meat, they don't eat beef. Where? India, for whom beef is a, not everyone in India, but by and large, a sacred animal. You do not eat beef, generally, in India. You eat other meat products, not beef. So we see that the basic need for food is satisfied in different ways depending on our environment, our culture, our personality, which we have to understand as marketers. Consumer desires are strong feelings of longing or intense craving for something. They have a strong emotional element. So you need food, you like meat, you desire an A5 Kobe steak at $200 for a 6-ounce cut, and that was probably before inflation hit. So need, wants, and desires can be different, right? What is a market? We talk about being in the market for something. Well, the market is the set of all actual and potential buyers of the product. People who are actually buying from you or buying this product in general, and who may buy the product. The implications of this, I say, are mad. In order to be part of a market, you have to have purchasing power or money. Now, when I say money, I'll take a cashier's check, a regular check, I'll take Venmo, I'll take cash, I'll take, okay, I guess I'll take crypto. So to be in the market, you have to have purchasing power or money, something of value to exchange. You also have to have the authority to buy the product that you want. Can anybody think of any products that a consumer might want that they don't have the authority to buy? You. Alcohol, if you're under the age of, I think it's still 21, ain't it? 21, so you don't have the ability. I should not be marketing my product. I should not be marketing my product to you, both for ethical reasons, but also because you aren't able to buy the product. And a willingness to purchase, demand for the product, a desire to exchange in it. We have any automobile files here, people that really like cars? No? Oh, Matt, you really like cars? Okay, so do you know what a Maybach is? Is that a pretty good car? High status, high value, would you like to own a Maybach sometime? No, well then there went my theory, but why wouldn't he own a Maybach? Maybachs run over $1 million. You may have the authority, you may have the willingness, you may not have the money. You're not really in the market. I got on a list, and this is true, for yachts somehow. And they kept sending me brochures for yachts. Now, I don't know what you think a college professor earns, but yachts are not in my future. And all these lovely brochures they were sending, just a waste of money. I'm not in the market. You're wasting your money. Who's in your market? Those are the folks you want to focus on, either actually or potentially. So marketing seeks to discover, then satisfy consumer needs through research and a marketing program. So here's the potential consumers, people actually in the market or potentially in the market down here. And what we need to do is to get information about their needs, their wants, their desires, and what's the technique we use to do that? We do that through marketing research, which we'll talk about as a chapter. To get into their minds, into their emotions, into their needs, wants, and desires, their satisfaction, their dissatisfaction. So we're going to discover these needs, wants, and desires in our organization through marketing research. And we're going to come up with concepts for products that might satisfy them. Could be an entirely new thing that nobody's ever heard of. Could be a new flavor or something. And so we're going to satisfy the consumer needs by designing a marketing program that's going to have the right combination of the product or service, the price, promoted properly so they know about it, is aware of it, it appeals to them. And place or distribution is available to them where they want it and when they want it, so they can get it. So out of this comes good services and ideas. And if we do it right, where should we end up? What should the end result of all this be, would you imagine? You got it? Yeah, no. Good. Anybody here got it? What do you suppose the point of the whole exercise is? Sales and profit, people, sales and profit. That's why we're in business, by and large. I'll give you some other examples in a little bit. But when done right, that's what we end up with. And then we go back through the whole thing again. All right, now we cannot be all things to all people, which I've already made the point about. Somebody isn't going to like whatever we're doing. So we've got to focus our marketing efforts on one or more specific groups of consumers. So down in the front here, should I continue to focus on beef products and Kobe beef and how good that beef is and how it's juicy and running with nice red blood? No. He's saying, yeah. No, because I don't eat meat. You're not focused on the right group. In fact, you're disgusting me a little bit now that I think of it. So stop it, right? So you can't be all things to all people. I don't know, do people still bring Coke products? Coca-Cola, some version of them, one person, a couple people. Well, in the old days, more people drank the product, but we wouldn't be satisfied with just one basic Coke. We got Coke, we got vanilla Coke, Diet Coke, Cherry Coke, Zero Coke, Coke Black, a filled product. Coke line, Starlight. Have you guys heard of these new flavors coming out that taste like Starlight? All right, so we have different products targeting different segments of the population, because one product, usually, doesn't satisfy everybody. So what are those different segments, needs, wants, and desires? How can you develop a marketing mix to satisfy them? So the marketing mix does represent the tools that we in marketing, in business, have to satisfy the consumer's needs and wants and desires. And I just alluded to that in our chart a minute ago. These are called the four P's of marketing, or four P's of the marketing mix. So broadly speaking, we'll give further definition later on. We're talking about the product or service that we're going to offer up the consumer. We're going to talk about the right price point for the consumer. $1 million car, not for me, thank you. or a yacht, not right. Promotion is the third of those four P's. And finally, place, getting the product to the consumer where and when they want it. So those are the four P's that we manipulate, tools that we have, to satisfy consumer needs, wants, and desires at an effort, at a profit to an integrated effort of the firm. And those all have to work together. Sometimes we'll see the marketing mix shown this way, as a, it's trying to say it's integrated, it's a circle. But what's at the center of the circle? The consumer. It's not what you want to do, because you're the manager. It's what the consumer wants, their needs, wants, and desires. So we have an integrated plan of action, price, product place, price promotion, with the consumer as the focus. And when you wander away from the consumer, you may be satisfying yourself, but you're probably not selling a lot of product. The consumer's needs, wants, and desires have changed. Competition has come in. You're not paying attention to what's going on. Most of a firm's efforts then involve the design of the marketing mix, the implementation of the marketing mix, and the evaluation of the marketing mix. Is it doing what I want it to do for this target audience? Am I bringing in the revenue, sales and revenue that I want to do? The important external factors that I've already mentioned a minute ago that influence our consumers are called the crust factors. Competition. Do we need to pay attention to what competition is doing and ask whether or not it's something we should do for our consumers? Well, yes. And what happens if you don't pay attention to competition? They're happy to satisfy your consumers better than you can or better than you want to do. And pretty soon you're wondering what happened. Competition is critically important. I think I'll just move ahead. Regulatory, legal, and political factors influence our consumers. What's a massive, I'll call it political, event going on right now that's influencing the global marketplace? The invasion of Ukraine by Russia has had massive fallouts, humanitarian, of course, you know, let's not go there, but for global markets, interfering with a bunch of things, food, and of course, heating oil, etc., that's upsetting consumers and influencing marketers. Regulatory CRS, social changes, we've already alluded to some of those changes going around, changing over time and impacting our consumers and our marketers. E. Economic, well, we certainly know about some major economic factors going on right now that's influencing consumers and marketers, which is, of course, inflation. Does inflation hurt everybody, all people, consumers equally? Is it everybody the same? No, of course not. Some consumers are really being hit hard. They don't have a lot of discretionary to begin with, income to begin with, and now that little discretionary income they have is being eaten up with food prices. Trump's not so worried about that particular product and others like him about that particular problem. You know, the top 1%, they're not that worried about inflation, okay? So you have different segments out there that have different needs given this economic trend and what's left. Technology, we just talked about changing technology. 5 years ago, there was no widespread use of NFTs. I don't know if it was a thing even then. Maybe it was, but not very big. Obviously, technology is changing. Obviously, it's influencing our consumers and our markets, right? So who's going to look outside the organization and figure out what's going on with these crust factors? Marketers doing marketing research and asking, what's it mean for our consumers? What's it mean for us? Consumer value is the way that we provide satisfaction. So consumer value is a unique combination of benefits received by the targeted buyers that includes what those buyers want, what they value. Not everybody wants the same thing, right? So it can include things like quality. Quality, as used in that sentence, is a funny word. Does everything have some level of quality? It's a 50-50 guess. Does everything have some value of level of quality? Yes. It might be good quality. It might be bad quality. It might be okay quality. If you're providing the level of quality that your consumers want, that's cool and groovy. How many of you guys shop at Nordstrom, Saks, like that? Do they have a pretty good quality product? Yeah? Yeah? And when you go in, that's what you expect. You know what you're paying for, right? And it's pretty good quality. Does Kohl's provide a quality of product? They do. Is it the same quality that Saks? Actually, my wife and I get in this argument all the time. I say their products may be just as good as Nordstrom's or Saks. My wife begs to differ, but let's pretend that when we go to Kohl's, we don't expect the same level of quality. But we're happy with that because we know what we're expecting and the price point we expect it at. So, includes some level of quality, convenience, on-time delivery, and both before sale and after sale service at a specific price. So what do your consumers value that you're going to be able to satisfy them with? Well, it'd be good if Tim popped up right there. I hope I'm not going to have tech problems. So Tim is going to talk to us about how he creates value in the sale of mobile homes. And of course, I don't know which one is him for sure. Let's see if this one comes up.
You know, I mean, a home is a home is a home. A mobile home, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of them for sale by owner. But what differentiates us, what I feel is our core, is our service. Because I go in and I go through the homes, I test the homes, and I'll fix things. For example, if there's a spot of mold or something, I don't just paint over it. I cut it out, remove it. I mean, we make the homes right. You know, I thrive and survive on referrals. I've sold homes to families 4 times. And so I don't cover up a defect. We make sure that, you know, we treat every home as though my own family member was going to move into it. And they don't really see that when they move in initially, but they also don't have problems later on. You know, anything I find, I go through the homes, I fix it. And, you know, we charge a little bit more for that, but in the end, they're getting a home that they're going to be safe and happy with. So really, I feel that it's more service than just selling houses. I want to make, these people are moving into our parks, the ones that we own the park, and we want a happy resident. I want referrals. So, you know, basically, I just want to make sure that they're getting more than they're paying for.
And that is always a good way to provide satisfaction. If you can provide more than the consumer is expecting, you're going to not just satisfy them, you're going to delight them. And delighted consumers often are going to come back. So he says, look, we create value through our service and doing it right. To provide satisfaction and get repeat business referrals, our consumers feel they are getting more than they're paying for. And if you've ever gone somewhere and you've gotten better service than you felt like you expected, better quality, a better deal than you felt like you expected, you're pretty happy. Now, what happens when you don't get that? You're not rushing back to do that again if you're rational. That steak was not good. Let's go there again. Now, wait a minute. Sorry?
I said when you said that, it's like, let's go somewhere else.
Go somewhere else. That's right. Because these people are not creating value for you. Now it'll pop up, yeah?
You know, I mean,
all right.
You know,
so,
I mean,
all right. So, how does this work in the era of COVID? Well, you had to bring your business to your customers' homes. For many businesses, consumers, home delivery went from a convenience to a necessity during the crisis. In Italy, this is global, for example, they saw online grocery home delivery users double between February and March of 2020. In China, China's premier food delivery service reported quadruple delivery orders early in 2020. In the U.S., some quick service restaurants and aggregator apps, DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats, are offering free delivery to capture share in this demand shift. Some fresh meal delivery startups experienced a month-to-month growth of 25% during the pandemic. Home delivery options have expanded beyond food. Pharmacies are offering extended free trials on their prescription delivery service. Car dealerships are offering to pick up and drop off vehicles for repair and maintenance. So as this environment changes, what consumers value also changes. And people wouldn't have thought of asking their car dealership, unless they were a very expensive car, to pick them up and drop them off. It wasn't a thing. And yet pandemic changed the things, what our consumers wanted. So across many industries, research says we've seen that retailers who grow customer service ratings the fastest have greater sales growth. Prices on a lot of electronics have come down. At the same time, the complexity of products has increased. Expert advice is more important than ever. Anybody old enough to remember Circuit City? You guys remember Circuit City and Best Buy? Circuit City, if you remember it, was sort of, usually, a big warehouse place. Product not on a specially nice display. Go try to find somebody to help you out. It wasn't a thing. Best Buy, who's been in a Best Buy? Lovely product displays, helpful salespeople, not on commission, helping you out. And of course, what did they invent to help consumers with technology? They invented the Geek Squad, which is still here and still successful. Circuit City is no more. Now, of course, these days Best Buy is struggling with changes in distribution in the marketplace, but nonetheless, they're still here, providing satisfaction for consumers with this expert advice. What are some value strategies that your firm might consider? Best price, which is a good value strategy. When we think retailing, who comes up as the best price in our mind? Yeah, say it. Walmart. How many people love Walmart? How many people hate Walmart? How many people, you'll know what I'm saying here, love to hate Walmart? In other words, I hate it, but I still go there and shop because it's a low price. Best product, a premium value strategy. Think Nordstrom, think Saks, think Mercedes-Benz. Best service available in this particular market for this particular product category. What's best? There is no right answer. It depends on your firm's mission, your firm's objectives, your competition. What are they doing? What are they providing? Your environment, and of course, really importantly in this little mix, your customers. Not everybody wants the same thing. My wife drags me to Nordstrom. I don't need Nordstrom. I'm perfectly happy going to Kohl's. She gets a little rash when I drag her to Kohl's. So we have different needs, wants, and desires of our consumers. So what's the best one? Depends on these things, including your customer. Doug Conant, president and CEO of Campbell's, when I put this together, Mark Klaus is CEO most recently, but he has a similar strategy, says, look, we're in a market decline when he was in place, and his market value is going down. So he says, look, I'm going to stress in our firm products that rank number one or number two in the key categories of simple meals, baked snacks, and veggie-based drinks. So he dropped non-core brands. Do you guys know Godiva chocolates? Godiva, is that a cheap brand, a knockoff brand, something of low quality? It's a very good brand with high value, but not for his consumers. It didn't fit in his wheelhouse of simple meals, baked snacks, and veggie-based drinks. So he focused on healthier for soups, V8 drinks, and Pepperidge Farm snacks, and has pushed creating products that scream value, nutrition, and convenience. He says, look, there are four musts for consumer products in my area. Value, wellness, quality, and convenience. And that's what he's focused on to provide his value to his consumers. Godiva chocolates, off it went to another company.
This notion of value with a product is, for the marketer, the game. And I don't, there's no other way to put it. You know, you are in competition day in and day out with those who are trying to figure out a way to better sell their product and to better convince the consumer that theirs delivers on the promise. So when you talk about a commodity-based business, and almost most businesses are that way, they're at a point where the markets are relatively mature, and the product and what you can get for that are very similar. You can look at telephones, you can look at music players, you can look at appliances. In many cases, the chassis looks the same, and the buttons may look a little bit different, but in general, there is a lot of similarity in what they're offering. The difference is that the promise of who that brand is, what it's delivering to you, whether that be quality, whether that be in the case of my product lines, superior chip to wall consistency, meaning you pick up that chip off of the color selector at the store and you put it next to the wall that you paint and it is exactly that same color. It is going back, you know, a year later and getting that same color and the consistency being such that you can't tell the difference between those two walls that were painted. It is superior color selection. It is the feeling that you are getting the absolute best. It's one coat coverage. It's not having to do this two or three times because, my gosh, painting in and of itself is not the funnest activity. Some people like it. It's cathartic. But in most cases, they want to get done. They want to get it done once, and they want to get it done right. So the promise is very much, delivery of that promise is very important.
So Fred Hunt over at Sherwin-Williams mulls over this idea of a value strategy. He says, look, value is the game. Consumer value, what your consumers want. It's a way to beat competition, providing the consumer with good value, better value than the competition. Products might be the same, but quality, consistency, reliability, selection, being the best, if that's what your consumer wants, is the way to win. Get it done right, based on what the consumer wants, and then whatever you promise them, deliver on the promise. Consumers pay money to get whatever it is you're promising them, and when you don't deliver, they're pissed off, and they do what you said, they go somewhere else. Not what you're hoping for. All right? So there's a value strategy in the real world at Sherwin-Williams. Here is a pizza example. Domino's creates fairness and customer value with an everyday pricing tactic.
These pizzas are the same, but depending on the day of the week, they aren't the same price. That's not right, so we're fixing it. Now you can carry out large three-topping Domino's pizzas for $7.99 every day of the week.
Okay, so hey, consumers didn't think it was fair. It's not fair. Let's make it all be the same price point. So that's the way we're providing a view of value. All right, relationship marketing links the organization to its individual customers, employees, suppliers, and other partners for their mutual long-term benefit. For example, Lowe says, our corporate responsibility is a cornerstone of our company and fundamental to our success. Our environmental stewardship program, strategic philanthropic giving, and focus on workplace inclusivity fuels our ability to serve the communities around us. We want relationships with our employees, with our suppliers, with our customers, in order to provide satisfaction to our ultimate consumers.
How we create value for our customers, we look at it several different ways. First off, we're a resource in many, many ways. We're a fairly non-traditional firm, so we don't stay in a certain bucket of just public relations and marketing or advertising. We have vast experience in promotional product and special event, so our resources in that area go very deep. We're also, as a small business, working oftentimes with small to medium-sized business, we become a trusted advisor. Oftentimes the questions that they ask us or the advice that they ask us isn't necessarily related to specifically a public relations or marketing tactic. And then simply just being there for our clients, kind of going beyond the typical 9 to 5 if they're having a special event. Even if the special event starts at 10 and runs till 2 in the morning, as one time a special bank promotion did, we were there. So simply being there for our clients is something that we give where we feel tremendous value, a little bit more than they may bargain for when they sign on with us.
And that's the idea again. In value, if you can provide them a little more than they expected, you've delighted them. They come back to you. This, of course, is a B2B service, not a B2C business to customer product, but it works here as well. Over time, managers have had different philosophies about selling products to consumers, about marketing, and the philosophies have evolved over time. So one early philosophy that still exists in some markets for some companies, for some consumers today, is a production concept. Production concept assume that consumers want products that are available and highly affordable. And so we're going to focus on accomplishing that for our customers. We're going to make them available and highly affordable. It implies that management should focus on improving production and distribution efficiency. A class right here before mine is operations management, I think. Anybody in operations management? Is it operations management? Yeah, so presently, if not in day two, they should be talking about this idea of production efficiency, doing things right. And that's one focus, of course, if that's what your consumers want. It's useful when demand for your product exceeds supply, so you're going to ramp up production. And by the way, there's a basic tenet of operations management of business. The more product you produce, the lower the unit cost over time. And so it's going to reduce your unit cost as you ramp up production. This was a big deal, especially at the turn of the last century, as we moved out of rural products into the Industrial Revolution. And the classic example here is, I know you've heard it before, Henry Ford, okay? And he says, you can have a Model T in any color you want, as long as that color is black, is what he said. Whether or not it's true, it doesn't matter. But the point is, he had this idea that he was going to drive prices of his car down in a crazy idea such that his own workers could afford the product they were making. Never heard of. All right, so that was a production concept, and it works in some companies still today. Product error, okay, this is different than the way your textbook says it, assumes that consumers want products that offer the most quality, the most performance, and the most features. Anybody's family have a mom or dad who's an engineer? I always joke about engineers. This is their field. Whatever it can do, let's make it do that. I can make it do this thing over here. Okay, let's improve the quality, the performance, the features. It implies the firm should focus on continual product improvements, which sounds good, but it focuses on the product, not on the consumer. And so sometimes you end up with silly stuff, I would say, that's not going to sell, because while the engineer is really happy we were able to do this thing, nobody cares. But it still works for some companies. This is a fun one from a long time ago. The Casio ML90 gives us 13 ways to make beautiful music together, and we can even carry a tune. This was a calculator, and they created the way to play 13 different tunes like Happy Birthday. But this was not MP3 quality. This was beep, 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 beep. You're buying a calculator. How many people do you think really bought it, or more are going to buy it, because it goes beep, 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 beep. Some engineer said we could do it, and they did it. I'm not sure it was a winner. It wasn't. So you're focusing on the product and its features. Microsoft ditched Snapchat-like highlights feature from Skype, which focused on the product, not on the consumer, because consumers found it too confusing. It was overcomplicating. Calling became harder to execute. Highlights didn't resonate with the majority of the users. Wrong focus. Just because you could do it doesn't mean you should do it. Sales error. This assumes consumers will not buy enough product unless there's a strong sales and promotional effort. Over time in the last century, you could sort of picture this maybe happening during the Depression, more recently maybe during some of the recessions. You got to push what you have onto consumers. It's useful for unsought goods. Consumers don't particularly want insurance or gravestones, so maybe you have to push your product on them. It's also useful if your industry has overcapacity and you're in a situation where you've got to sell what you make. You don't have a situation where you can make what the market wants, and so you're going to, quote, push the product. You're going to sell the product. Not especially good marketing, but the sales era. The marketing concept error, close to what we've been talking about, assumes that achieving the organization goals depends on determining and satisfying consumers more effectively and efficiently than the competition. So you can see that's sort of what we've been talking about mostly. and an organization should seek to make a profit by serving the needs of customer groups. Okay, that makes sense to us now, we would think. I'm never sure when pens are done writing, so. Over in the B2B world at Timken, this is Mueller talking to us about the marketing concept in a B2B world. What happens if I just exit and come back? Does he pop up?
In our vision of the Timken company, it's all about creating value for customers and improving customer performance. For what that means in my part of the business is helping customers improve performance of their products. So if it's a company that's doing mining, one of the things that's critical for their business is uptime of equipment. If equipment is down unexpectedly, it's a big deal, costs thousands, millions of dollars. And so one of the things we do is try to improve the performance of their equipment and extend the life of their equipment. For some customers, it means productivity gains. And so we are growing in the service part of our business where we're helping customers increase uptime of critical assets. And so we'll go in with equipment and technology and knowledge to help those customers recognize when a critical piece of equipment might fail due to a bearing failure or some other component and tell them that in advance so they can plan maintenance and reduce unexpected outages. So that's a couple of examples of how we try to create value for customers. It's more than just selling them product. It's more about helping them improve their performance.
So you're running a windmill farm. You're an industrial consumer. And those windmills are big and they're tall, and when they break, it's a problem, and they're hard to fix. Wouldn't it be nice if you could know in advance before that bearing fails? Would that be value to you? You bet. Boom. We got you covered. We're going to help provide value to you. And when you can show corporate employees, clients, how they can save money or make more revenue, they're on board with you. The marketing concept, we've already said, three parts of the concept, discovering satisfaction to consumers' needs, wants, and desires, at a profit, or to obtain organizational goals, through an integrated effort of the firm. So we've certainly seen that today discussed already, but I'll let you write it down. I think I should make shorthand a prereq for this course. Shorthand? Speed ready? Okay. So Michelle Skin is a not-for-profit marketer, and so she is a fundraiser for a hospital.
I can't emphasize enough understanding motivation and understanding what the consumer wants. It is not about the needs of the hospital. It's not about the direction of the organization. It's what's the direction of the consumer? Who's going to use that service? Who's going to purchase that product? And what's their motivation? And how can you tap into that?
What would motivate someone to donate money to a hospital? My family member has a serious illness. I would like to see that cured. I'd like to donate money to you to help cure cancer.
Yeah.
What would a different reason be that someone would donate money to a hospital? Yeah. Financial. If I donate enough money, I get a tax break. Can we see that that's a different motivation, and the person doing the marketing would have to take a very different stance for the financial person, motivated person, than for the person who wants to cure an illness? So she's saying that we have to understand the consumer's motives, what their needs, wants, and desires are, even when we're talking about a not-for-profit situation. So firms have to identify and satisfy customer needs and continue to do so. Competition is going to force you to focus on the consumer because they will take your consumer away. And consumers have to be seen in the context of all environmental and market factors. You also have to have a market orientation. I'm not going to get any further today because it's just about 5 o'clock. I apologize. This will be, and I'll send you an email to say where, the end of the material for Mini Test 1. Please don't forget to take it. I will be sending you an email about it. Thank you.